Welcome to the Business Results Program. This is how to transform yourself, your team, and your company to perform better and achieve higher results. Let's get started. I'm so happy you're here. My name is Pete Winarski, and I'm the CEO of Win Enterprises LLC. Check out CompleteBusinessTransformation.com and look at the latest posts and resources we put there to serve you. I started this program because I want you to know that it doesn't have to be that hard. Business leaders like you struggle to get results, to build your team, to satisfy customers, to grow your businesses, and to stay sane in the middle of these crazy dynamics going on around you. My team and I have had full careers in business leadership roles, and we get it. We've had the same challenges as you, and we can share what we've learned, and we can make your life easier. In this program, I will be joined by various members of our team and other guests that I know can help you. We will offer new perspectives and share some of the secrets that you're just not hearing about anywhere else. The Business Results Program is your personal journey to improve yourself as you improve your company and achieve your most important goals and deliver the business results that make you and your team happy. Now, let's get to today's episode. Hey everyone, Pete Winarski here today with Andrea Obston. And Andrea is a public relations consultant, an expert in marketing, and specializes in crisis management. She's also an author, an adjunct professor in PR and public relations, and a speaker, and a fun person with a sense of humor. And we're going to have a really good conversation today. And today we're going to talk about your business reputation management process. You know, why does your business reputation management even matter? Right? Because it does. You maybe more than you realize. And so that's today's conversation. Andrea, welcome.
Thank you.
What is business reputation in the first place? Let's get grounded with a definition.
This business reputation is your currency. It's what you trade on. So much of what we do in business is based on trust. And once you have a reputation of trust, it attracts business and it also crisis proofs you. So if something bad happens, if you start life with solid reputation currency, you can weather that storm.
Yeah. So, I mean, really, it sounds like it. The currency is such a wonderful concept and a wonderful way to think about this, because if you have no reputation, you're broke.
Yes.
It sounds like if you have a bad reputation, you're in debt.
Well said.
Yeah. So, you know, the idea here is a really interesting one. So let's expand on this currency concept of your business's reputation. Why do we care at all? Why does it matter? Can't we just go do our business on a day-to-day basis, or should we do something extra on the side just to make sure?
I'm a PR person. So I believe that if you just do your business in a vacuum and you don't tell anybody about it, not only do your current clients appreciate what you do, but they don't talk about you, which is the best way to get new clients. So a reputation is what the world thinks of you. And the challenge is that once that reputation is out there, people forget why they thought that about you, about your business, and they just put you in a box. This often happens after a business has weathered a crisis. Mm-hmm. People will forget the crisis, but they'll go, I think there's something funny about that place. So we end up with that impression staying with people. And even when someone says, I went there and she was great and she got stuff to happen for me, if you in your mind are thinking, I think I heard something funny about them, You can't even hear that endorsement.
So you just described, kind of two ends of the spectrum. One is people will potentially have an icky taste in their mouth and not remember why, but remember the icky taste.
Yeah, I shouldn't be smiling at icky space taste, but yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it's not funny if you're the icky one. The other thing you said though was, you know, if you do nothing to shape your reputation and you're just doing business, it's almost a, you know, philosophy of if you build it, they will come, which as we marketing minds know, isn't a very good marketing practice. It's a great movie theme, but it's not.
Interestingly enough, they just restaged the Field of Dreams. The MLB did.
Yes.
And they promoted the heck out of it. They didn't wait for the field just to be built. They actually promoted the heck out of it.
Yeah, that's you see the two ends of the spectrum. And I don't know if you saw the opening with you know, Kevin Costner coming out and the players coming out. It was really, really fun to see if you're a fan of the movie.
Well, and the thing that, and this goes to reputation, is that what that opening did was to activate all of your feelings about that movie. That's a feeling movie. I mean, yeah. If you were to just describe the plot of that, which you can equate to this is what I do, you'd go, guy builds baseball field in Iowa, in corn. I don't get it. That movie and your reputation is all about evoking a feeling about you. I don't care what you make, whether you service septic tanks or you give haircuts or you make computers, the emotional connection in this day and age is huge because we have so many choices.
Yeah, I love the fact that we've accidentally started talking about Field of Dreams, but you know, it's baseball season at this moment in time and it's fun. And that game just happened a few weeks ago. And so,
well, I teach sports public relations and I am going to be using that as an example of what, when you promote a team, you tap into. It's the feeling. When you were marketing a team or a sport or a product, it's all about a person's personal connection to it. It doesn't matter what the product is.
Hmm. Well, let's back up to the beginning of a business deciding that my reputation matters, my business reputation matters. I've got to do something proactively. What would you suggest? How does someone start to build the right reputation?
You need to know who you are. And I'm amazed at the number of companies, especially those who started. You know, they just all of a sudden saw a need and started. And most of us do start. I mean, we've been in business for 38 years. There was no plan at the beginning. My plan when I started this was to get another client.
Right.
Just get the way everybody starts in the door. And that's okay. And then you go through that period where after you've done the initial success and you're not sure why, but you just do, all of a sudden there's that lull and you think the last time that the phone rang or the last email comes in is the last email.
Right.
If you're smart at that point, you'll try to figure out who you are. And a reputation, this is also the definition of a brand, is the intersection of who you think you are and who they think you are.
Mm.
And only when those two intersect and you have to find that, can you start to build the foundation of a reputation.
I see. So that's the building part out of the gates. And then how do you take it from day one into, okay, I'm pretty good. People seem to like me. Not that many people know about me, perhaps.
Right.
How do I expand it and enhance my reputation?
We have an exercise that we do with our clients where we ask them to envision three clients or customers that they feel they're a success with. So this is for a business that maybe has been around for 1 to 3 years and has that information. So let me think of three specific clients that I love them and they love me. And let's list the attributes of that client. And I don't care if you're going to say they're blonde or they're an Avon or they're everything about that relationship. Then do the same for the three clients that you have never made happy. And we all have them.
Hmm.
And when they call or when they email, you go, oh, what now? And we all have them. And they probably feel that way about us too. So what are the characteristics of that relationship? And not surprisingly, the two are usually mirror images of each other. Hmm. Here's the third one. And by the way, we invented this process when we rebranded our own company 20 years ago. Because we're trying to figure out why people like us. Why do they come back? Why do they renew? And yeah. So the third exercise is what I call the thanks a million client. It's the client that you moved heaven and earth. You were so successful with them, it was beyond your wildest dreams. And when they're done, they stick out their hand and say, thanks a million, this has been great. And you're like, wait, what? We're done? And what you will find is that the first two are mirror images, but that third one is usually something you didn't do.
Say more about that.
A way that you managed the relationship. It was expectations you had of them. It's on you. So now that you have that, build yourself the perfect client. Say to yourself, I want to go after clients with these attributes because I know I can make them happy. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't care if you're selling flowers or business services or PR services. If we don't make them happy, the relationship doesn't last. Mm-hmm. And then do your research to find out everything about that person. What are their pain points? Why are they thinking they need you? Where can you plug into that? I mean, it's basically a sales process. Mm-hmm. And then reputation building is crowing about the things you have that fit in with their need. What do they want from you? And what can you offer to fit in with those needs?
Got it. So I'd like to just recap this a little bit and maybe you can help. I may have missed one thing. And so the mirror images of each other, those who love you, those who like, oh my goodness, they were a horrible client. I didn't like them. They probably don't like us. The third flavor was the thanks a million. So are you saying they were kind of satisfied, but one and done? Or thank
and if
you.
They were, and if you know there's more work to be done, it's on you. That lack of communication of why this needs to proceed is something you did not do.
Got it. And had you been a prolific communicator and kept the dialogue open and helped them to see and understand one, their issues and your solutions to those issues, then you're suggesting they would have continued as a client for a while.
Yes. And another piece of this, and this sounds incredibly self-serving, but especially for those of us who offer service, you also need to remember to crow about your own accomplishments. Mm-hmm. If you make problem solving look too easy to the client, yeah, after a while, they don't think you're doing anything.
Right.
So, you know, years ago, there was a commercial that said, never let them see you sweat. Mm-hmm. I'm saying, let them see you sweat, because if you don't, they will think it's easy. And if it's easy, they can do it themselves, or that's what they believe.
So interesting that you're sharing that, Andrea, because, you know, of course, we're business consultants and we see this, unfortunately, more than once where someone has said, oh, I can do that.
I can do that.
You know, in fact, I've often said this to, you know, our own team. You know, our biggest competitor is not some other consulting company. It's the client thinking they can do it.
I agree.
And that's exactly what you just described in this process of, you know, wow, that was so easy. You're not sweating. And
it's very simple. I have had a client since 2009. And I consistently perform for them. I consistently get them in, you know, exposure in national media. I work very hard for every one of those, what we call the pickup. Mm-hmm. So when I get them in the Wall Street Journal, as far as they know, they just appeared there.
Right.
But the reporter woke up in the morning and said, I need to talk to these people because they're smart.
Yeah.
the longer you have a client, the more that they think it's easy for you to keep doing these things, which is not true. It's just as hard as on day one. Mm-hmm. So now, I mean, and this is very self-serving. Now, every time I get a victory, whether it's in Inbound Logistics Magazine or the Wall Street Journal, I am now sending to their entire board and saying, look what we got. And it's a we thing. It's always a team thing.
Sure.
But instead of my thinking, oh, they just sort of know that I did that, I'm taking like I'm the center of the universe. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of that email, I always say, thank you for helping us. You know, thanks to everybody on the team who helped me do this. But it's a way of reminding them, I'm the one who's doing this to make you look good. And it's the same thing with any product.
So there's a fine line there that I want to help get your help with, because it is about we, and it's about look what we all did, congratulations and gratitude share and making them feel good while still reminding them that it was you who made the magic happen. So
right. Everybody can buy shrimp in carrots and spices. Everybody can do that. It's the chef that can make it into something you never forget.
Mm. Sounds like you've been watching Gordon Ramsay.
Oh, as much as I possibly can. And everything else has got to do with food.
yeah, so fun. All right, well, this is genius so far. Now I want to get into what could be the most exciting part of our conversation, which is that, something's happened. The crisis management side of the equation. So you help to build the brand, you enhance the brand, but then something happens. So let's just talk about crisis. You know, why is it important? Why, you know, this might never happen. Why do we care? Why do we have to prepare for this?
And you've started it off properly, because a smart company has some form of a crisis plan. Most companies, big and small, do not. You plan because you must stand at the gates to protect that reputation. And in this day and age, where everybody's a broadcaster, where everybody has a say through social media, you can literally, big companies can be taken down by little people. There's an interesting take on crisis management in a book called by Eric Denzenhall about, I can't remember the exact title. It's got to do with, I think it's called Glass Jaw. And I don't know if you know what a fighter with a glass jaw is. Oh, a fighter with a glass jaw is, yes, it's a guy, he could be the biggest human being in the world, but if you hit him at exactly the right spot, he goes down. Mm-hmm. Denzenhall's theory is that you can do that with General Motors, that somebody sitting in their basement in fluffy slippers can take down General Motors from, you know, with the right, a well-placed tweet.
Mm-hmm.
So the reality is that all of us exist at the goodwill of the public and our clients. And when there's a dent in that reputation, and you have to decide whether it's an incident or a crisis, that's a whole other conversation. If there's a dent, you can't put your fingers in your ears and just pretend it didn't happen. When I teach crisis management, I talk about something called misreading the situation. And that is that the bad thing happens. Everybody gets together in senior management and says, we're right and they're wrong, right? Aren't we right? Aren't we right? Of course we're right. So this is nobody cares about this thing. So meanwhile, outside the walls of the castle, things are being fomented. And people are talking and adding and piling on to the point where something very small becomes very big.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea with a crisis is to determine what has happened, to determine what you're going to say initially. And let me just start by saying there's something called, we call it an initial responder statement. Mm-hmm. It's also sometimes called a holding statement. And what it is the thing you say right off the bat that makes the world know I'm on it. Because frankly, that's what people want to know at the beginning. They believe that they want a response from you as quickly as they learned about it, which means as quickly at the speed of social. One of the biggest mistakes that happens is everyone's understanding of that, but they react too quickly without thinking. A responder statement needs to be something that only states what you know at this time and doesn't do the old, if this is true, because it's everybody remembers.
Yeah.
It also is a statement that needs to be, that is capable of being walked back. Because at the beginning of a crisis, you never know the full extent to what's going on. You find it out as things move along.
And hopefully it's not worse than you first thought.
Yes, but what the public wants at the very beginning of any crisis is to know you're on it. To know you know about it, to know you're taking it seriously. And even if you don't have any answers, I mean, I have a client right now that is a victim of ransomware. Unraveling that takes a million years. But the public needs to know you're on it and what does it mean to me?
Yeah, so you know the idea of defending your reputation starts, it sounds like, if I could use some other words, that you're coming from a place of integrity, a place of honesty, being truthful, and you know, sharing what you know and what you're willing to do to gain confidence back.
And there are times when you know, 99% of the time, I know things I simply cannot share. I'm very transparent with the media, whether it's in a crisis or otherwise. But there are things that I can't share. For example, medical information. Mm-hmm. I just can't. So you explain why you can't. It's a black box. And, oh, I can't talk about it. Or, of course, you never use the expression, no comment. We all know what that means. But you've hit a key point, which honesty and transparency as far as you can at that time. Mm-hmm. We were handling 15 nursing homes from the East Coast to the West Coast at the beginning of COVID. Everyone was dying to blame the entire outbreak on nursing homes. Mm-hmm. Everyone was vilifying these people because it was all their fault. And at the beginning, we were incredibly transparent. And the lessons that I learned during that is that if you give out too much information, especially at a time when everybody's crazed, there's a good chance it will be badly used. Mm-hmm. So you also don't want to send out a fire hose because people will feel like they're drinking from it. So it's a balancing act, but what you said is the most important thing. Transparency, openness, being true to your brand. You know, this field of study, this field of practice is only really came into official birth in 1982 with the Johnson & Johnson Tylenol. And there were no rule books then, but what J&J did then is that they ran back to mission. They went back to brand and how they construct it. And that is actually ultimately what enabled them to keep their number one position as an analgesic. And they were able to gain back the majority of their own reputation within a very short period of time. Mm-hmm. And it was because they ran back to brand and they said, this bad thing is happening. It's against brand. We will do what we have to get back to brand. So it goes back to your reputation and knowing who you are and who are you truthfully and always responding within that brand.
This is interesting. And, you know, Andrea, it brings up for me an example years and years ago with a consulting project where the customer satisfaction study and survey that we did found that customers who never experienced a problem had a certain high level of satisfaction. Those who experienced a problem and had a wonderful solution actually had a higher level of satisfaction. So relating that situation and that survey result to what you're describing here, and use J&J as an example, that clearly that was as big as it could get in terms of badness, and they used it correctly and regained confidence so that, you know, they're still today in that number one position.
That thing about you helping people out of a difficult situation, mm-hmm. they love you more. Yeah. That's still proven out. In fact, it's proven out in social media. Great book called Hug Your Haters. And he talks about haters online. And he talks about what happens when you overcome a negative things. And yes, you do improve brand loyalty.
What a formula, right? Yeah. Yep. Can we throw some situations at you?
Sure.
Let's see. Let's play. Let's say that you have a business executive who is caught in some sort of an embarrassing situation. What should the individual do, the executive, and what should the company do?
When I answer that question, you need to tell me who my client is. Is the client the company, or is the client the business executive? Because I'm going to behave differently.
Yeah. So let's say that it's an executive on the team, but your client is the CEO.
My client is the CEO.
In this case, yeah. So it's the big boss, a team member, got caught in an embarrassing situation. So embarrass him for sure. The individual.
Okay, but am I working to preserve the reputation of the company?
Yes.
Or the individual did the bad thing?
Let's start with the company.
Yes. The first thing that I do, and this is why I asked it, is not out loud, but my goal is separating the fate of the two people, mm-hmm. The institution.
Right.
Especially if you know, let's talk about the Weinstein Company. What they've done and what you should do is to separate the company from Harvey Weinstein. Mm-hmm. And what is the most frustrating at that point? And again, initially, it's we know about it, we're looking into it, and we're taking it seriously. Now, you may say that's about as wooden an initial statement as you can get, and the answer is thank you. Mm-hmm. Those first statements are rather wooden because you don't know a whole lot.
Right.
The next thing and the hardest thing you have to do is if that executive has been with the company or worked with the CEO for many years and they feel a certain loyalty, is to get them not to go running out to defend the person. Mm-hmm. Because you don't know where their fate is going. I can't tell you the number of times when I've had to say, you know, I understand that you and Joe have worked together for 15 years, and then now it looks like he's been taking sexual advantage of employees. Mm-hmm. And you want to defend Joe because you like Joe and you think he's done a lot. Do not come out with a litany of all the wonderful things he's done. Do not remind people how long he's been with the company.
Yeah.
Remember that your loyalty and your goal is to preserve the company's ability to stay in business. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that may mean separating your path from Joe.
Right. And so well said, right? And I'm glad you clarified with the question of who's the client here, because that is always, you know, in any service provider question, you know, who am I serving? So does the answer change dramatically if you are, let's say it was the CEO who has hired you and they messed up, and they're saying, help me, Andrea, my reputation is at stake here. What do you do then?
Shut up for a while.
Don't say another word.
You want to have a cooling off period. If you are smart and you're the CEO, you step down, whether temporarily or permanently. You know, we've just been through a blueprint of how not to do this with the governor of New York. You don't twist in the wind. You don't attack your accusers. You don't say it's no big deal. And the worst thing you can do is to say, Pete, I'm sorry that bothered you.
And I'm sorry,
you know what that says? It's on you. Yeah. Right. You're just a thin-skinned individual.
Right.
Yeah. Me saying, I'm sorry, that bothered you. Mm-hmm. You're not taking this lightly. If the public takes it seriously, then don't go out there and do a Cuomo and say it's no big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so obvious when you have an example like that, which was, you know, in everyone's faces for a couple of weeks there.
You know, if I were advising him, I would have said to him, this is a distraction from my ability to do the job. I love the state of New York, which he, of course, folded in. I love the state of New York. I care what happens. This is a distraction. So I'm going to temporarily step aside and hand over the reins to the lieutenant governor, because I love this company. I love this state so much. Mm-hmm. I'm not, you know, you're not talking guilt. You're talking about, you know, major distraction. Mm-hmm. Again, you're going back to mission. Supposedly, if you're the governor of the state of New York, you care about the success of the state of New York. So talk about that.
Right, right. Yeah, well said. What, here's some more scenarios. So you mentioned ransomware just a bit ago. And, you know, clearly, you know, we all think it won't ever happen to us. And yet, it's everywhere. And, you know, you could end up being held. I've heard of insurance policies where, you know, their job basically is like they get the ransom and they just, the insurance company pays the ransom, because it's such a, so difficult to get out of it, right? And they really have you tight. So what would you do if a client ended up having a ransom problem?
When there's a ransomware attack, you don't know how long it's going to last. Step back and say, how will this impact my customer? So for example, if the ransomware, say you're AAA and you have a place that does emissions. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that didn't happen, but instead of saying, this is terrible, it's awful, we've been, you say, we're shutting down that emission center, and here's where you can go to get your emissions. So step back and say, first of all, how is this going to impact my customers? Because frankly, that's what I want to know. Mm-hmm. I mean, first of all, I want to know where I get my emission sticker done. Second of all, I want to know is because of that ransom attack, do you know about me? Mm-hmm. So put yourself in the mind of the customer and say to yourself, what do they want to know from me? And when I teach this, the first thing I do before we do any message development is to let the students know they have to figure out who they're talking to. Because different people want different things from you.
Yeah.
If I'm closing a plant, you know, I've got a plant in Lilyville, and I have to close the Lilyville plant. When I'm doing message development on how I'm going to handle that crisis, I think about all the people that are going to be impacted. The employees want to know when and what are you going to do for me? The investors want to know the closing of the Lilyfield plant is going to make the bottom line look better. Mm-hmm. The mayor of Lilyfield wants to know, what are you going to do with the land? So back up in a crisis and say, who is impacted? And please, please, please don't overlook your employees. Mm-hmm. There's a tendency to spend so much time looking out that you forget that your employees have to continue doing their jobs in the face of this crisis. They're also going to get stopped in Stop and Shop in front of the cantaloupes.
Yeah.
And people are going to go, Pete, you work for that company. What's going on?
Right.
And the last thing I want to know is that you look at your friend Jane and say, they don't tell me anything. Mm-hmm. So once you know who you're talking to and what they want from you, then you come up with 3 to 5 talking points that's going to frame every communication, and then take those communication points, those talking points, and hand them over to the legal department and make sure you can say them. Mm-hmm. There's a tendency to think that there always is a conflict and a crisis between the PR people, the communications people, and the legal people. And there's a tendency for both sides to say the other guy doesn't know what they're talking about.
Who wins that argument? Because
you know. Always the lawyers.
There they are.
Because your client is more scared of them than they are of the PR people.
Yeah, it could be.
So you need, as a PR person, and I bring a panel of lawyers into my crisis class, and I say, we have to find a way to work together. We have to. Mm-hmm. Because in the end, we can't follow the lawyers. Because we follow the lawyers will say no comment until the case is settled. I've had crises that have lasted 2.5 years.
Yeah.
You can't be mum the whole time because you have no business to come back to.
Right.
So you have to find a way to work together. Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm really glad you brought up the example of the plant closing, because that is a crisis by definition of how you need to operate. It's one it was a decision you made, right? So you know, the leadership team decided to close, which is totally different than a data breach. And, you know, next thing you know, 10,000 customers' credit cards were stolen from, you know, someone, you know, under the dark web, right? So this is an example of you decided, and now you have to live with the consequences.
Yeah, and I want to bring up something that brings up, which is that within a very short period of time, the public will decide, after you've been hit by a crisis, whether you're a villain, a victim, or a vindicator. And, you know, going back to reputation, once they've decided you're the villain, nothing you do, including leaving your dog at home with a babysitter and going off on vacation, i.e. Cuomo, that became a villainous thing. Mm-hmm. Because what happens in a crisis is increased scrutiny. So one of the challenges with the ransomware one is, do you play the victim card? And you were a victim, but do you want to respond as a victim? Because if I'm your customer and you respond only as a victim of this thing, I'm going to say, why did you let this happen?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I've only literally played the victim card once, and I've been doing crises for over 30 years. Mm. Once. You want to be seen as the vindicator, the person who makes it all better.
So 30 years at this, and social media has crept in the last few. How has social media changed the whole reputation game?
It makes taking back control of your reputation much more difficult. Mm. So when I started in this field, I could plan out how I was going to communicate with the press. Because I knew I could talk to the print media first, because they didn't publish until the next morning. Mm-hmm. So you would stagger things so that the message all came out in a certain order.
Yeah.
You got that? No. I mean, everyone has control of the message. Everyone is amplifying it. It becomes where if we used to say that you have 24 hours to wrangle a crisis, it's not even 24 minutes now.
Yeah. Wow. So what do you do? I mean, let's say something kaboom, you know, someone walks into my office as the CEO says, Pete, I don't know how to tell you this, but this just happened. Do you immediately start clicking away on the keypad to put a post up on the social media outlets, or what do you do?
Very interesting question. 9 times out of 10, I will put together communications that are reactive only. Because some things, you know, I mentioned whether is it an incident or is it a crisis? So I don't necessarily blast everything out. The first thing I do is put on my ears. So if you have social listening, there are programs that will listen for social, and it can be as free as Hootsuite and as expensive as some of the programs out there that measure the tenor of the online conversation. Mm-hmm. Start listening. Mm-hmm. start turning to also traditional media, go to their websites, because what happens is there's a news story and then you scroll down and see the comments. You can often get the pulse on the public from that. Start watching all social media. You know, your job is to get the reputation in your control to some extent. Mm-hmm. You may pull every customer service person off and throw them on social media to start listening, not responding, mm-hmm. because responding on social media can be explosive. The way people post on social media and talk on social media is always bigger and more expansive. People have to do that. Mm-hmm. You think about a restaurant review on Yelp. It's never, "This was a lovely dinner." It's, "This is the best meal I've ever had in my life." It's got to be bigger on social. So that's part of how you're taking the pulse.
And along those lines, not only does your feedback have to be bigger on social, but also recognizing someone's complaints are bigger on social.
Yes.
You know, they're hiding, right? You don't have to, their face isn't out there. It's not like they're looking you in the eye and saying, "I don't like the way you treated me." They're blah, blah, blah.
Yep. And I think that's really interesting. We've been hired by clients that have had to deal with the whole negative review thing.
Yeah.
And again, the principle applies. You should be concerned and compassionate. That's what you demonstrate in social. It's what social media. It's also what you demonstrate in crisis communication. So if you write a review that says, "I treated you badly," you literally have to have people monitoring those sites, or you have the programs to do it. Your first thing has to be, "I'm sorry that happened, Pete." Mm-hmm. Tell me about it. And what you want to do is sooner, if you can't solve it right away, you know, if you're United Airlines and you're ticked off at me because I canceled your flight, I can fix that pretty easily. Yeah. I can go on social and say, "Where were you going and where do you have to go?" And we can all do this all online and everybody can see us being nice to each other.
Yeah.
But if you've decided that all you want to do about me is fetch, all you want to do is complain, then my job is to get that conversation offline. Clearly, Pete, this is something that's bothering you. Let's take this offline. Yeah. I'm going to private message you so we can talk back and forth. Or if you really want to be in his face, you can say, "Here's my email." But you don't want to do that publicly. You want to do that through private messaging. But what you want the public to see is, "I want to connect with you face to face." And if you're just a troll and you just want to be nasty about me, I will only go back and forth with you 3 times. And then the community will see you're an idiot.
Well, and that does happen very, very quickly. And I'll just comment on the power of what you described. I don't remember what it was. I was on some product on Amazon or something and did a quick scan down of what the reviews were. And there was a negative review, and the rebuttal may not be the right word, but you know, the comment after that was from the company. And they said, "I am so sorry you had this experience." And my reaction to that was like, "Oh, good job." And I didn't get caught up. And I didn't really care what the experience was or what the answer was. But back to your point at the very beginning, Andrea, you know, I have a sense that these are good guys or not good guys. I don't remember why. I don't remember the details. But, you know,
it happened the other, we had a very strange thing. Our internet provider, we have the most high speed version of that in our complex, in our condo complex. We lost internet, but literally our neighbors did not, because they're not on the same level of service. Mm. So my husband called and the tech, clearly not a customer service guy, goes, "Oh yeah, we know about this." Okay, get a point for that. And there's a part that we're waiting for. You're a big internet provider and you're waiting for the Pony Express to drop off a battery. I mean, that's
yeah.
I was so angry that I tweeted about it. I mentioned their name in the tweet and said, really? I'm not going to mention it because they handled it well. Really, internet provider? You're waiting for a part? And within seconds, I got a response to my tweet from the company publicly that says, hi, I'm blah, blah, blah from there. Tell me what we can do to help.
Right.
That all happened publicly. Everybody saw that. That's what you're looking for with that, with those online things.
Yeah, got it. So just as we're in the home stretch here, obviously COVID, this COVID world now has created quite a few. You mentioned nursing home clients. That's an extreme. But what about just the regular everyday dynamics of masks coming back, masks going away? Have you been vaccinated or not, et cetera? And that, there's all sorts of high emotion around this whole topic.
Yes.
So what, you know, are there any special watch outs that you can give us to think about with respect to crisis and COVID?
In terms of communicating with employees?
Yeah, employees, and then should anything bad happen, of course, right?
Okay, well, let's talk about the employees. Let's say you're trying to get them back in the office.
Yeah.
And there's that push and pull. Again, compassion and concern. Don't assume everybody who doesn't want to wear a mask, that doesn't want to get back, don't assume anything about it. All of your employees, whether they want to get vaccinated or not, are watching the way you handle that employee. And even though they may not agree with that person's decision, say it's someone who doesn't want to get vaccinated, they're watching you as an employer to see how you handle it. And so always compassion and concern. And how about explaining the why?
Yeah.
Why do we need everybody back in the office? What is the advantage to me as an employee? I mean, my son works in a very Silicon Valley culture, and he's been work from home for forever. And he deeply resents it when they make him come into the office. But they explain the why. We need you here for this reason. It's not just because I said so.
Right.
Yeah. Listen. And, you know, listen with the heart, too. As crazy as it sounds.
And I've been in conversations, you know, over the course of the past year where, you know, the decision point with an executive was like, I'm not sure how to handle this. What do you think? And I'm so glad to hear that some of my advice matches what you just described. I'm like, oh, good. I wasn't off on that.
Well, none of us when we were 12 liked it when our parents said, because I said so.
Yeah.
And there's a CEO mentality that says they might just get down to that. And it never goes over well.
Right, right. What an enlightening conversation this has been. And it's so important too. I mean, you know, I think back to some of the media training that I've had where, you know, we got to the part of crisis and, you know, just be honest, tell the truth, you know, be clear. Don't run from it. You know, things like that, that are just human nature may not give you the right answer if you're in a self-preservation mode. I mean,
that's a really good point, is that people go into that self-preservation mode and it can be counterproductive to the long-term stability of your relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is, you know, I hope all of you who are listening have taken notes. I don't want you to experience a crisis any more than I want one. But if it happens, here's the roadmap, right? Andrea has really, you laid it out for us today. So
yeah, and I've got quite a few blog posts about how to deal with individual crises on my site. So, you know, you're welcome to get that free advice.
And go ahead and share it. If you go ahead and share
it. AOMC.com. The company is Andrea Obston Marketing Communications. So it's AOMC.com. If you forget all of that, Obston is Boston with the first two letters reversed. You can find me. But there's a lot of individual advice blogs in there. If you go under blogs about how to handle specific crises, please have at it.
Yeah, what a great resource. Is there anything I missed that I just absolutely had to ask you and forgot that it's advice that people need to know? What would that
I be? Think the biggest issue is that you need a quick and timely response, but don't be so quick that you regret it. Mm. Before you open your mouth, you need to do it quickly, but you need to put on your heart and ask yourself, what does this person need to hear from me and when?
Yeah, that speed thing. I almost imagine on a sitcom where someone says something and they very quickly apologized and admitted something that they had the other person wasn't even aware of.
Oh yeah. That's the other thing. Make sure you're listening to what is troubling people about what you just said.
Yeah.
You need to really understand where they're coming from, because that's how these things blow up.
Mm-hmm. Andrew, this is fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you.
What a great podcast episode. And so Andrea Obston, Boston, with the first two letters swapped. I love that. All right, Andrea, thank you again. And all you listeners, please go back. This is an important episode, and re-listen to this one and share it with folks that you think would get benefit from this. Take care, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Business Results Radio. Remember to share this episode on social media or directly with people you think would benefit from it. And if you are willing, subscribe to this podcast and give us a 5-star rating. Go ahead and do that now while you're thinking of it. I also want to invite you to visit businessresultsradio.com. And if you want to learn more about the Wynn Enterprises team or about the business consulting and mentoring services we provide, visit CompleteBusinessTransformation.com. Thanks a bunch, and we will catch you again soon.